I'm Carol Woltring. I am director of the Center for Health Leadership and Practice at the Public Health Institute in Oakland, California. And I'm currently affiliated with really three leadership development enterprises. One is the National Public Health Leadership Institute, funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. One's my own California-Hawaii Public Health Leadership Institute, but we're in the process of developing a separate leadership institute in Hawaii that eventually will hopefully serve the Pacific Islands. And also we have our California Public Health Leadership Institute. I'm going to be talking about the first year of work with a very new model in leadership development. And I actually have two presentations here. This one is more on making the pitch that leadership development is a real possible and effective strategy for working on organizational change and achieving capacity, especially in local health departments or really in any organization, to address the social determinants of health and thereby improving health equity. So this session is going to be making the pitch on, so what's leadership development and what's a good model? And my next session in room 506, a little bit later, is going to be more on, so what are the core practices that a public health department needs to engage in? And what did we find in our institute that, what progress our organizations were making and more of our evaluation findings? We're going to go a little deeper on what it looks like inside an organization. And I really appreciated the comments of my colleagues who have given you a lot of insights on some of the dynamics of this work. So a couple of learning objectives. First, I'm hoping that you'll walk away from this really understanding this model of leadership development that we're using in our what we call a regional public health leadership institute. And our focus is on developing leadership for organizational change and to transform public health practice to address health inequities. We're going to be talking about what some of the key elements of the program design are. We're going to discuss some of the innovations in program design that we began to utilize, and then tell you what we did with our findings in year one and how we have evolved the program into our current year two model, and we're in year two right now. The mission of our institute is to develop a network of health leaders and organizations with a commitment and capacity to improve health equity by addressing the social determinants of health. So why health equity? Well, again, as has been said, there's been a tremendous amount of wonderful definitions and dialogue, especially about the difference between health disparities and health equity, which is really critical. I like to point number two here, and Adi Twaltman said something about this at the town hall this morning. The more egalitarian countries experience the best health status, not the richest. And in our unequal U.S., we rank 30th in life expectancy for men and 21st for women and 20th for mortality. So it really is about egalitarianism, as Doak and others have pointed out, as well as resources. And then leadership for health equity. Why leadership for health equity? There's been a tremendous amount of wonderful work that precedes a lot of our work coming out of the World Health Organization. But if you read this, you can see that the pitch for leadership, as others have said, for this work is critical, and we're talking about the top. We have to have leadership and sponsorship and championship at the very top of organizations. Okay, so the first year, 2009, we had a total of 38 individuals in our leadership institute, and this year we have 38, but the composition shifted a bit. First year we had 18 local health department participants, and they came into the organization in teams. So we actually had 11 local health departments, 18 participants. And we've done the same this year. Organizational teams is the model that we're using. We're about organizational change. You come in as a department-sponsored team. Your director signs off on the application. Your director is the sponsor for your project work. That has been a very important setup for an institute focused on organizational culture change and organizational change. We had individuals from local health departments. We also had the state health department involved in the first year. And then from Hawaii, we had 10 individuals, five from inside the Hawaii Department of Health, and five that were really community clinic system leaders on the islands that came into the Institute. This year, Hawaii had trouble getting funding. That's one of the reasons that I'll explain in the model. We're really working on Hawaii having their own Public Health Leadership Institute, which is really appropriate. They're picking up on the social determinants of health model and love the work. It's organic for them. We are in local health departments. We had five organizations send second year teams. We basically have 14 local health departments, 28 individuals. So I'm going to focus on the right-hand side of this because I want you to see what we're trying to measure. The outcomes are that we increase participants' knowledge, skills, and relationships. We enhance them, but to lead effective organizational change efforts specifically. And then we're measuring the change in organizations and their understanding and also their actions related building capacity to initiate activities or enhance activities to reduce health equities by addressing root causes of social determinants of health. And then as a result of that, not only are they doing internal work, but they're having discussions externally and communicating, enhancing collaborations with other partner organizations in the community and community-based organizations. So our approach is, in any leadership development model, the combination of really getting to know people and build relationships, but also having it fit into an executive education model where you're full-time working at your job, but you're also deeply engaged in leadership studies. You have to combine and want to use a variety of approaches. So we have three on-site learning retreats, two one-day regional meetings where we're bringing together the first and second years, and as we go into year three, we'll be bringing together one, two, and three in regional meetings, one-day meetings. You have to spend the night. We're building a learning collaborative in the state, big state. We're having some, this year, one-day leadership academy. We're focusing on The Speed of Trust by Stephen Covey and bringing together multi-health sector leaders in a half-day meeting. We focus on a change project, health equity change project. We brought in an innovation I'll talk about called Action Learning Coaching, and we use a variety, really embedded. We have about eight webinars we do using WebEx, and we archive them, MP3 format, download them, listen to them anytime. Okay, the curriculum framework. We focus on personal leadership. You have to start with a person. You can't just jump to another project. We've had some resistance on how much time do you spend on the personal level, and some people want a tremendous amount of personal leadership curricula, and others are ready to move on. So we try to meet everyone's needs. We do a lot of work on self-awareness, self-assessment. We use the MBTI and IOP. We talk a lot about the difference between leading and managing, collaborative leadership, facilitative leadership, and a lot about executive presence. We do have to do some content work on health equity and social determinants of health, the difference between equity and disparities, how to communicate it, how to frame the message. We do import unnatural causes, all the work that's come out of NACHO and a variety of organizations. We're trying to stay on the cutting edge on everything coming out and showcase it for our folks. And then the whole organizational and change management part of the curriculum is very important because we're really creating change leaders specifically around this work. So the issue of understanding system change, creating a vision, designing and implementing a change initiative, and involving stakeholders, and creating good decision-making processes along the way is really important. This, a little hard to see, but basically I wanted to highlight that we don't start with them working on a project at the beginning. We found it's down there, third kind of dark column from the bottom. We feel now, after working with this institute model for a couple of years, that we really need to work deeply on that phase of knowing yourself as a leader and getting this stuff deeply as a leader, kind of the more the dialogic work that Doak's doing. And then you get more aware of where your organization really is and how do you stimulate the conversation and lead that inside your organization. So then what should your change project be? It's very interesting to see the difference between what they think it should be when they write an application and what it becomes about month five or six. So not coming to closure on the project ideas at the beginning is really important. We have a year-long model. It's a cohort-based model, we call it, when you keep 38 people together for a whole year. And that network and relationship building is critical. We launch it with a May retreat. We have a retreat in July, and we have one in January. So the issue of these people coming together on a regular basis we found is critical, but not for too long. You can do a lot in 2 days. And so it's only like one overnight. It's a round trip. We're trying to keep the travel costs as low as we can. Right now where we are is we've had our July retreat, and we're planning our January retreat. And the first day of it, we make it a statewide conference, and we showcase the work coming out of the Institute to the organizations that aren't into it and to our colleagues around the state. And this year, we have NACHO actually sponsoring our day one retreat with some support from the California Endowment, who also is one of our major funders, along with CDC and Kaiser Permanente. And actually, Doak's coming for 3 hours to California to inspire us. Interactive webinars, really critical. And the issue is, as we begin to get to sort of like beyond collaborative leadership and start really getting into content and strategies and tools, we encourage our attendees to invite other people in their organizations to be on the webinars. And then we also archive them. We're beginning to turn them in MP3 formats, as I said before. People can download them on their iPods. The issue is learning, 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 reinforcement, getting it out, sharing the resources. That's our principle. Innovations. One of the things that I think is very different about this Leadership Institute, and I've been doing leadership development work since 1991, pretty long time, and I've experienced the individual leader model and the team model, and this is an organizational team model. And when you design these types of ventures, you have to say, what is the ultimate goal? What's the ultimate purpose of this Leadership Institute? And we closed down very early on. It's really to build leadership, a network of leaders, but leadership for changing organizational life, culture, work inside an organization. And we all know that's very difficult to do. So you can't do it yourself. You can't be a lone ranger, go to the Leadership Institute all by yourself, go to the mountain, learn all this new language, and come back and think you're going to change anything, right? So, you know, from all this work on that type of model, I said, if we're going to do this, we want 2 to 3 people from an organization, sponsored by the director, signed up by the director, go back, work with the director, get a project constantly asked about and supported by the director. Critical. We learned that was so critical. The difference between having sponsorship by the director and not on the project work was critical. And thank goodness about 90% of our people had that sustained, even though their director might have changed during the year. So 2 to 3 person teams. And we're getting depth because we've got 5 of the first 11 organizations sending in second year teams. And they want to send in third year teams. So the tipping point, the critical mass thing, is also something that we're working on. Organizational Change Project, Action Learning Coaching, which we'll talk about, Social Network. We have an insight. We've got an online learning community. We're beginning to make it a place where they showcase their work. They begin to communicate with each other, as well as a place for us to archive all the materials that they're developing, we're developing, and then our archived webinars. I talked about the multi-year regional meetings. This is where we're bringing the years together. So we're building this learning collaborative. The change project itself, they basically work on it, I would say, for about 8 months out of the year, but they don't end at the end of the first year. They go on after that, and that's why we realize after the first year that they need a learning collaborative. And we help them scope and scale the work for reporting it out at the end of 8-9 months, but these are projects that have 2-3 year lives. Action Learning Coaches is a very, very interesting thing, and it's very innovative. And 5 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. Okay, I'm kind of talking real fast here because I thought I was running out of time. Action Learning Coaching is something that we decided after year one that we really needed to do. And what we mean by this is, as a way for us to stay in touch as a staff with the organizations as we move from retreat to retreat and they began their project work, I decided I wanted to have a coach for each organization. And so I have a team of 4 of us that are trained to not only, we do OD work, we do coaching, but we're coaching for sort of them, guiding them through the process of applying the tools that we're teaching them to their project, and sort of that type of work, and helping them about sponsorship and stakeholders. But we're also teaching them to stop and think about what they're learning. And the thing that it's sort of obvious about, you know, we should do, and then we should stop and think about what we're doing, and we evaluate, but do we harvest what we know and talk about it as true learning? And it's almost a quality improvement cycle. And it is some of the newest kind of work going on around adult learning right now. And so what we're doing is we're modeling with our organizational teams. So let's do some, plan it, do it, stop, what happened, what did you learn, think about it. How is that going to impact what you do next? Reflect, you know, do, think, act, plan, do, think. And so the issue, though, is putting learn in there. Learn. And the new concept is harvesting the learning. And it fits into the learning community concept, which has been around since the early 90s. But it takes it down to a real practical level of, in a team, to stop. How many times do you, in a team meeting, do you stop and say, so we did all this stuff, who did this, who did that, and where are we, but about goals, objectives, what did we learn? Just stopping and saying, what did we learn by doing that? And putting that in our vernacular, it's very powerful. So we're doing that this year with our coaches with our organizations. This shows you how we've kind of adapted the Ning site, our online learning community. It's beautiful. We have one shop stop for all the information we give to them. You know, no more emails with attachments, get lost, and, you know, did you send that to me? No, you didn't, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. It's all here. It's on the calendar, the sign-ups for the webinars, the archiving, the resource library thing. It's perfect. The problem is for people to really embrace using an online learning community. Okay, we're all struggling with that. It's great for one-way stuff, right? Get the information, sign up, register. But the issue of interaction, we're trying to figure out how to give every organization a discussion forum in our multi-organization collaboration space. And for that to be a place that you showcase your work, and if you remember, it came out of Alameda County or Contra Costa County, you can go in that, and then we're going to try to archive it all up to a resource library. So you can just do a search and find the strategic plan from LA and find the staff development curriculum series from Alameda. We've got some great products coming out of our organizations, and we want to know about them and share them. We've learned that striving for health equity requires substantial and significant leadership and a long-term organizational commitment. And so we don't graduate anybody. You know, you don't graduate from our institute. You're always a part of this institute. It's a learning collaborative. You know, you don't, I struggled the first year about do I do diplomas, you know, because I don't want people to think you haven't arrived at the end of the year. You've just begun, you know. So we've been playing with how we celebrate the intensive year, but we realize that we're going on together. So they've got it, and they really love the regional meetings to come together and bring the years together. Sponsorship, constant, consistent sponsorship for senior management is critical for the project work. Organizational change-focused leadership programs do better with a team model. Data staff training and awareness raising are common starting points for capacity building when you go internally. I'll be talking about that more in my next session. That link between health equity and social determinants of health, and then health disparities, and linking those and understanding those concepts is critical to forwarding any kind of organizational change work. And we learned, this last one was a real aha. We launched this institute in probably the most difficult year you could ever try to get people to allocate time for training and travel and staff being gone. H1N1 hit the summer of our first year, and all the financial crisis of no training and everybody getting pulled, all the budgets getting pulled. Our folks barely made it through that first year, but because of their commitment to each other, in this learning collaborative, they pushed forward, and in the last, you know, four or five months, did incredible things, and they reflected that if they hadn't been in the Leadership Institute and kind of made the commitment to do the work, they would have made no progress and gone backwards and not had commitment to even pick up the work after the crisis. So they were so glad they were in something that committed them to moving forward, and the leadership was as well. So So here's a wonderful quote. If you just take a look at this, this is from Heidi in the city of Pasadena, that when you create an environment where people can come together and take risks, that point was made, and learn together, it really can help them do so much more than if they're trying to do it on their own. And so a number of folks gave us some comments like that. This is the model we've moved to. It's a learning collaborative model. Basically, we've got on the right is the Leadership Institute. So it's a year one intensive program. Now our year one people have moved to year two. We don't charge them anything. They're on the webinars for free. They come to the regional meetings. They can come to the day one of the last January retreat. It's only $750 tuition, but I waive it for everybody that can't afford it in year one. They pay for their travel and their hotel rooms, but everything else is free because of our wonderful sponsorship. So we've got an ongoing dialogue, collaborative, and then we have some one-day leadership academies. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Join me in thanking all of our wonderful panelists. And we do have time for some questions, and I'm sure I know I had several, and I'm sure you have several too. So if you would stand and give us your name and ask a question and tell which panelist it's for, and I'll try to repeat those so those in the back can hear also. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Julia Overdorf. I'm a postdoc at Yale School of Public Health. And my question is probably directed to all the panelists or whoever would like to address it. It was inspired, however, by the first presentation where you talked about the root causes of health disparities. And then my question is, how can leadership at the organizational level or even at the personal level can help to address those issues of the society not being as egalitarian? So even this, so, and I don't, I'm trying to carefully phrase my question because I don't want it to sound insensitive or abrasive. It's not that, you know, I don't think that it's valuable to do the leadership research and foster leadership in those respects, but I'm just trying to make sense of, well, what kind of contribution can it actually be?
Let me try to wrap your question up. I think she said the question was for any of the panelists, but particularly inspired by Doug's presentation, and said the question is really how can leadership really inspire the work and make progress in health equity. So, Doug, do you want to go first, or does someone else perhaps want to comment after that?
Can you hear me all right? Let me just talk from here. I think that it speaks back again to courage and taking risks. I think that. I've had two separate directors in the course of doing this work, and they have been fully endorsing, and our commissioners, we happen to live in a very politically progressive community, and our county commissioners are also very supportive of this work. So that's incredibly important. I don't know how you can even begin. You couldn't use some of the words that we use to describe inequality and inequity if you didn't have that kind of environment. So that's critically important. I think Lisa would agree. You have to have the leadership there. At the same time, we have lots of leaders who, even while they're endorsing it, don't get it at all. And I came here, the last session I went to was Linda Ray Murray talking again about what she thinks we should be doing, what public health leaders ought to be doing. We ought to be basically advocating for any one of these, you know, these like the foreclosure crisis. Public health should have been there stating what happened. She talked about her sheriff being there saying, I will not foreclose on these people who didn't even know that their landlords were in foreclosure, that the renters in those places, and who said, I will not foreclose on anybody who we don't have the papers from the bank that clarify they were processed correctly. You've got to have that kind of leadership ultimately saying, this is what we should be doing, this is what all of you who work for this organization ought to be doing. Now, I know that's not easy to get. We don't have it yet, but that's why we're sort of working toward people understanding what we're talking about.
Lisa.
I'm just going to stand up because I'm behind a screen. So one of the things I was thinking about that I would love to have a slide is I showed you everything that was going away in December, and what I would ask you to visualize is a bicycle with a whole bunch of training wheels. And so I showed the director going away, me as the director of the Center for Health Equity, the mayor going away. But what you're going to find is in January at our department, because this is broader than the Center for Health Equity now, and it's bought in by the team and the executive team, we don't need the training wheels. Because the bike now is being run by all the people in the department. And so that's the thing. So we still have a leadership team, despite some of the main leaders leaving. that's going to push it, and the executive team is also going to push it, and the staff, because they've been playing into the process, they're pushing it. So it's very much like when you do social action in the community, the idea is that when you can't stand up and go to city council, because I'm a city employee, that if they go to cut your program, you've done your work well enough that the community comes forward. So it is about leadership that stays. So think of that bicycle with the training wheels. They're coming off in January. The Louisville Metro is going forward.
Another question? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Leanne Bynum. I am from the University of Mississippi, and this is directed at Dr. Redmond. Congratulations. I'm in the process as well of writing a dissertation, so I'm with you and hope to be there soon. My question was about your control variables. I think I'm sure you've had them, but due to time, you weren't able to discuss those. Can you tell me a little bit about what things you did control, and did you consider positive and negative affectivity as a control variable? And then the second thing is, and we can talk about this offline, is political skill is kind of the second runner and comes behind emotional intelligence, and that might give you some interesting results in this, mm-hmm. in the same population.
Yeah. So the question was for Dr. Redmond, and it was, could you talk about the control variables in her study, and then talk about perhaps touch on political skill to simplify your question?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me from here? Should I use the? Yeah, you guys can hear me. Okay. So I had two different control variables, one for the supervisors and one for the staff. And part of that was because of the ability to use the survey. So the bar on EQI was administered through multi-health systems, and you could only use their questions that they asked. So they asked gender and age. So that's what I was able to control for the supervisors, taking the emotional intelligence. For the staff, I controlled for the gender, the age, the race, ethnicity, the years of service in their current branch, the years of service in the division, and years of service in any public health at all. So that's what I did control for. So no, I did not control for positive or negative affect, although that was included in for the emotional intelligence piece. Some of those questions were like at the core, and so at the very beginning of the question, you can see kind of it. The validity of the survey, and there's some of the affect questions in there that were kind of hidden, but I didn't look at those specifically. And then the political skill is another great question that was not asked in terms of control for, but could be a definite variable that relates to those trust factors, emotional intelligence. And you know, one of the things that came up too that a lot of people said are, you know, are you gonna ask the division directors, what about their emotional intelligence, and what about, you know, goes on. So from a power perspective, depending upon where you are, the branch manager just may be a pawn in the hand of the division director. So it may be that they are just fine, but the decisions are made above them that are then dealing with trust issues there too. But that's a great question. Thank you.
Another question? We'll do one on this side. Yes, sir. The question was basically whether difference in correlations between discipline and levels of emotional intelligence.
Great question. No, I did not. One of the things that I was really cautious about was related to response rates and whether people would respond. So I actually was blinded to all of the specific branches. So I didn't know who from what branch answered the survey or who participated. So that was all blinded to me. And that was to increase the likelihood of people participating, because I knew some of these issues, and especially among the staff and the trust, if they knew they were going to be found out and their branch manager could somehow know if there's something like that, that I thought that was risky. But that would be a great question, and actually they were kind of wanting to know in some ways, well, what about this branch or this branch, and by their discipline, and educational background is a great another piece that could be looked at. It's like this whole can of worms that could be opened. Yeah.
I think there was a question over here a second ago. Yes, ma'am.
And I think it's information overload for the record, so it's a little bit fuzzy, forgive me, and I had some bad sleep. So anyhow, Carol, just wanted to know when your services will be available internationally. I think there's a lot of what we call community health centers in Toronto that would be very interested in this particular kind of training. That's number one. And for you, One of the questions I had was around, you talked about one of your challenges being sort of making, I guess, this notion of sort of health equity tolerable, right? And I just wanted to know why you use the word tolerable versus accepting, because I think, you know, you probably already know the analysis on the challenge. So I just wanted to hear.
Okay, so let's try to take those. First, I think we're trying to give Carol promotion and asking if her work is going to go international. And I suspect that's a funding issue, right?
That's a yes, I'm going to try, come talk to me. But I just want to say, too, I've got some materials up here if anybody wants some background materials.
Okay, great. And then she asked Doak why he chose to use the word tolerable in some of his presentation.
You'll notice there's quotes around it. And actually, I make a point out of fact that word is very loaded, and it's actually embedded with privilege. I mean, that's what the whole point of using the word was. If I had more time to talk about that slide, basically, the idea is that when non-target group members are made aware of privilege, often their first impulse, their urgent need, is to become immune to it, that they don't have it, really. And yeah. So, and if they don't get that, they want to run away from the conversation. So
that's it's, like the before we actually
right.
To sort of, it's the next step.
Absolutely. That's why we have 2 days together, so they can sleep on it one night, right. And then several weeks, so they can sleep on several weeks and think about it some more.
Okay.
And then the other side of that is that the target group members, when they feel the failure of the non-target group members to grasp the truth of their experience, view dialogue as painful and pointless. Why should I go through this with you if you're going to do that? And if that's not reversed, they will understandably abstain from the whole process. So that's why we need 4 days, for one thing. And I really appreciate your picking up on the quoted word tolerable, because it is a very intentional. Oh, I imagine.
Yeah.
Good dialogue.
She's listening.
Yes.
Listening.
I think everyone's been listening. There's a lady in the back who has a question who's been trying to get heard. Yes, ma'am. So if the question for those of you who couldn't hear it was, what about, how did you handle feedback and did you personally administer the instrument for emotional intelligence?
Thank you. Yeah, great question. And that was one of the reasons I picked that instrument, is our Kentucky Public Health Leadership Institute uses that instrument within part of the training. And so one of my colleagues at the university, Aaron Lewis, is a certified trainer in EQI. So what I was able to do is that it was actually administered electronically. So they were given an email that they then click on, and it brings them to the survey. And so both of the surveys were electronic. And then after they got that, Erin actually got all the information, and then she gave it to the data people, who then de-identified it, sent it to me in data form. So she then also followed up with each of them individually to say, you know, I'm here for feedback. Let's talk about this. What's interesting about that is only two of them initially took her up on that and said, sure, I'd like to talk about the results. So then after all this, I actually presented 3 different times to the Department of Public Health in the past few months with the results and said, yes, and she's still available if you want personal feedback among the supervisors. And the other piece that I was able to do too, because of my funding, is to get some resources, some books, and some other even interactive learning that I was able to leave with the department that can be used as a checkout basis to kind of encourage continual learning in that.
Great. Another question. Yes, ma'am.
Audrey, please start. Don't be mad at me. One of the things that at our particular workplace that was struggling with is sort of working on sort of a leadership survey. And the leadership survey sort of goes through, the qualities of the leaders that we have right now, and sort of looking at their ability to lead management and lead to progress, right? And I think that it's one thing for them to sort of be very aware of health equity and a lot of anti-oppression principles, but some of the staff members don't really get it and aren't really prodded to get to that understanding, right? And I don't think it's a funding issue, I just think it's a lack of general coordination within the conference about who needs to get what training or if we all need to get the training. So one of the things that we're struggling with, I think, is sort of, and there's been a lot of discussion between staff and management, is how do we go about, once the leadership survey is done, right, whatever it says, how do we go about sharing those that information? Because in some senses, that could be really confidential. It's a personal development plan. It could be, you know what I mean? So how would you suggest with information, the lack of information that's provided,
So the question, and this is very simplified, is sort of how do you take sort of the survey information you get from sort of a leadership survey around health equity, and then how do you use that to try to push it down to other levels, especially the people who may not even know they need to use it? And it sort of, I think, starts to touch on systems change, but I'll let Lisa go from there.
Well, it's a really good question, because that one of the things I was pointing out is there's a whole bunch of different personalities on the team and how we roll information out, and that was even one of the questions. People get information when they need it or something like that. So far, actually, we did this survey a little over a year ago, and I only got permission to give it to the executive team when we did our executive team training, which was 3 months ago. And the initial thought from the directors was, we need to understand it more before we give it out to folks. We need to understand why people are saying what they're saying. So it's actually released in a way now that anybody at the department can have it. And what's been happening actually in this co-learning atmosphere, in that tension and fear of having these conversations, is the stopper in October was that the team wasn't ready, the director's team wasn't ready. And so they got ready, and when they did, they felt empowered, if you will, to work with other folks. They were in a place where in the co-learning world, they didn't want to look stupid, and they weren't sure that they got it yet. And part of what I was trying to say is, I don't have it. Well, that's what we're doing. We're learning together. And so as they went out and started holding the conversations, you could watch this dynamic going back and forth of this learning and getting it and things like that. So what's the strategy? I think you just have to read the personality of your group. My personality would have been release it right then and there. Let's start the discussion. And then the consultant was talking to us about co-learning, and she also agreed that it might not be the best way to start the discussion. But right now, it's out there.
We still have time for a couple more questions. Yes, you, sir.
I have a quick question. Eric Cox, I'm actually a graduate of the National Public Health Leadership Institute, and I just because it's a very simple question. In your presentation, you mentioned that you have made kind of a paradigm shift in doing more team approach instead of individual with your leadership institute work. Was there a certain reason for that kind of a change?
The question for Carol was really, why did you make the paradigm shift to go from sort of individual participation in the learning institutes to team participation?
Right, because the major outcome we want is the result of what's going to be different because people go to the leadership institute. It wasn't so much that they personally were going to have more skills so they could take on more higher leadership positions in any organization, which is your typical leadership development outcome that you're striving for. It was that you, with others, were going to lead a major organizational change initiative. And so you can't do that by yourself. So we shifted to team inside organization. It wasn't team with community and transportation. And you know, we're our model's morphing into a team now of multi-self-health sector leaders. So we're shifting to allowing health departments in years 3 to 5 to come in if they still need to get started with their work with that organizational team. But we're also going to encourage teams of community clinic leaders, nonprofit hospital system, community benefit program leaders, and public health department and health system leaders to come in together to be able to go to that level of collaborative, as Hersa would say, trans-sector work. But you have to, you really start coming in as a team if you're really going to build relationship and do the work.
Great. Another question?
I have a comment on the last question, if there's another.
Absolutely.
The last question was asked of Lisa. I just wanted to share that one thing that's distinctly different between Louisville's approach and ours is that you have the levels teaching the levels. So it's moving down through the hierarchy. We've intentionally not done that. We have people at all levels in each circle of the workshop. And actually, when we suggested there being a manager workshop, especially the organization rejected the idea of top administration. No, it should, because that's expressing hierarchy. In the last three or four workshops, a theme that has been emerging from the dialogue that's really strong is that the power dynamics within the hierarchy of our organization have a lot of bad things in it. The people do not feel empowered. Because some of the kind of things that you're trying to get out in your survey, and that I think you know, we didn't do a survey like that. But the stuff is emerging, and those of us who are facilitating are looking for the way to give the message back to the leadership that this is real. I mean, what we've got here is a real problem. People do not feel empowered within this class system within our
organization. And that's so funny because I think it's more than just, like, it's also, it's about the work that we're doing, but it's also about, like, the internal dynamics of how the work is being done. And someone had talked about, you know, that contributing to performance, right?
Yeah,
so the environment is toxic, right? You can't communicate the way you'd like to communicate.
Right.
It's a problem.
Absolutely.
It's a big problem.
I think that's a theme that went through all four presentations, but you pulled it out, which is great.
Yeah. We have time for one more question. Well, actually, I have one for Dope. And I think, oh, I'm sorry, where is it?
Oh, the lady in the back.
Oh, okay, great. Yes, ma'am, I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
My name is Deanna, going back to the leadership and practice, the public health leadership. And you talk about the different entities that you're addressing, like, you know, public health departments, everything. Don't you think that within that established management teams that there's already a particular indoctrination because they're already in it? And if you kind of move, I'll say, use the term upstream a little bit, that should maybe consideration be taken for like the public health colleges and universities and programs for the future leaders that are going to be coming out of the programs and entering these different entities to get it just a little bit further upstream?
The question was, since folks are coming to these institutes already from a culture within an organization, should you move upstream, maybe even to the point where they're trained through their education?
I'm glad you raised that issue because we have some public health training centers in California, and I've started talking with them about how we can embed some of the things we're learning about this work in the training of our next generation MPH professionals. So you're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, start as early as you can. But the concepts, the thinking, the paradigm shift, the culture change, all that we've been talking about here since the beginning with the Health Reform Day, my goodness, you know, we shouldn't be learning about this in like the third phase of your career, right, anymore. It should be at the very beginning. So. Yes, let's front load.
Okay. So, well, thank you very much. I suspect some of you may have some individual questions. I think the panelists can all stay a few minutes. I know Carol does have another presentation. So thank you very much for your great questions and your attention.